Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wellness Ultimatum Radio Show. I'm your host, Omar Cumberbatch. Today, we have an awesome guest. Will Rivack, the co-founder of Oral Wellness, is stopping by to talk about oral health. And I just want to give you a little bit of background of how I actually got introduced to Will. Will was a guest on Underground Wellness podcast with Sean Croxon about 3 years ago, and his show was really an amazing show. It's like definitely, I mean, Sean's done probably hundreds of podcasts, and Will's absolutely stood out big time. And I remember one of the quotes that he said, and it's always stuck with me, he said that one out of three adults over the age of 65 have no natural teeth in their mouth. To me, that just floored me, and from that point on, the show was amazing, and I'm just an honor to have him as a guest. Let me just give you a little bit of background about Will. Will and his wife, Susan, created Oral Wellness to help empower others with the tools and information to navigate to greater oral health. They believe that optimal health is a whole being experience, and awesome oral health is a part of an awesome functioning immune system. Will, thanks for holding on the line. How are you?
Good, Omar. Thanks so much for having us on, bro.
Oh, my pleasure, my pleasure. I was just talking a little bit about, like, the first time I heard about your work and just how amazing it is. And it was really, really shocking, some of the things that you were coming up with, because I guess a lot of people really take their oral health for granted. And I just, you know, I want to give you an opportunity. It's like you and your wife are all about helping others navigate to greater oral health. Why did you get into oral health, and what's the big deal about our mouth?
You know, it's a great question. I think you're right, Omar, that by and large, our culture does not recognize the importance and the implications. I mean, it's just, it's that we learned it so early, at such an early age, that we all just assume that what we're doing is right. You know, you mentioned one of what we call our sad statistics that we commonly like to talk about, just to kind of rattle people's cages, because oftentimes people don't realize the importance of this. But so, you know, you mentioned the one out of three 65-year-olds not having any natural teeth in their mouth. Let me throw you a couple other sad stats. If you're over 30 years old, if you're listening to this right now and you're over 30 years old, chances are greater than 9 out of 10 that you have active gum disease in your mouth. And if you're under 30 years old, that doesn't bail you out, unfortunately, because 65% of 15-year-olds have active gum disease. And a recent statistic, 98% of, so 98 out of every 100 men, women, and children in the United States has some form of active oral disease. So this is a humongous issue. So that's point one I want to bring up. Point number two is that the mouth is a gateway to the rest of the body. Okay, we hear about a link between oral health and heart disease and cancer and diabetes and arthritis and all these other things. So if you take these two facts together, the sad statistics that I reference, and the fact that we have this connection, the mouth has this connection to the rest of the body, then this is a big, big issue in our book. And we realize, you know, we're not seeing anybody else standing up and hollering about this. And it was actually a point of contention when Susan and I first started Oral Wellness. It's a funny story. When we first started this, we're like, okay, we're going to talk about oral health, because my wife in her past, she was diagnosed with advanced gum disease. And rather than go the conventional dental route, she took care of it herself. And the dentist more or less said, wow, I don't know what you did, but that's amazing. It's a dental miracle. And you know, that was, what, 17, 18 years ago now. And so when we were essentially praying for, okay, God, where's our home-based business that's going to do no harm, that we're going to be really fulfilled by and all that we was essentially an earnest prayer of ours several years ago, we said, wow, maybe we should be talking to people about, you know, what you did with your mouth. And then it was the hurdle of, are we really going to talk about gum disease to the public? Are we really going to go there? And we got over that, and obviously we're very grateful that we do, because it's a very fulfilling work for us. It's, you know, it's a huge, what we call a huge elephant in the living room. We don't, you know, our culture has it's kind of a blind spot about this issue.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and can you actually just even explain a little bit what actually is gum disease? Because I know that there's a lot of different ideas in people's heads about it, and I mean, even some of the symptoms that people have. Like, I understand that it goes like unnoticed for quite some time before it really makes an impact on you. Correct?
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. You're totally accurate with that, Omar. So, gum disease is a chronic bacterial infection that it's kind of a weird one. So check this out. It's outside the body in a way. So how do I say it's outside the body if it's in our mouths? Well, it's a bacterial infection. It's a communicable disease. We essentially pick it up from parents, partners, and pets. Those are our three P's, the three what we call the vectors of contamination. Mm-hmm. And, invariably, we're all carrying it for the most part. And then as our immune system is not at 100%, this bacterial infection gains ground, and where it lives and where it thrives is in a very small pocket between your teeth and the gum tissue surrounding your teeth. There's a little bit of a lip there, and the bugs get down in that lip called a gum pocket, and they proliferate, and we essentially consider gum disease that, it's enemy inside the gates because it's in your body, but it's not in your body. Your immune system cannot deal with it because it's outside the blood system. So it's kind of in this gray zone between in and out of the body, and as a result, the immune system has trouble getting on top of it. But at the same time, these bugs can and do swim upstream into the rest of the body through the capillary system and the gum tissue. So that's bad news because you're dealing with bugs that produce substantial toxins, and they undermine our health, and there's direct correlations to, arthritis, cancer, heart disease, diabetes, low birth weight babies, cognition, like Alzheimer's disease, all sorts of stuff is related to our oral health. And I'll throw you a quote here, Omar, that I sometimes don't address. There's a famous integrative oncologist. So he was a whole body cancer doc. The guy's name is Joseph Issels. He was a German guy, perhaps the most notable integrative oncologist of the last century. And kind of a fun side note about Dr. Issels: in the last few days of his life, Bob Marley went to be treated by Dr. Issels. Obviously he went too late to be treated, but Bob Marley was treated by Dr. Issels the last, in his terminal stages of cancer as well. Anyway, Dr. Issels is quoted to have said that 97% of all cancers, not just cancers in the mouth, 97% of all cancers have a causal relationship to the mouth, teeth, jaw, and tonsils, end quote.
Wow.
Okay, so wrap your head around that one, dude. That's huge. Now, either Dr. Issels is a total kook, or he's got something there.
Yeah, it is crazy. I mean, like I said, your podcast that I heard with Sean was just crazy. And like I said, it sat with me for so much of my life. And I definitely try to be on top of my oral care now. Like, what is it about these bugs that are so crazy? Like, to cause this much of an issue? Why are they so unique? Right.
Well, science has identified certain what are called periodontal pathogens. These are bacterial organisms that thrive in this gum pocket zone. And the issue is that it causes a systemic inflammatory response. So like I said, they don't stay in the gum pocket. So here's, kind of a takeaway gem for anybody listening to this. If you take some floss and you go floss your teeth and you do what's called, we've coined the term conscious flossing. And here's what it is. It's rather than mindlessly going about your oral hygiene, you actually pay attention, imagine that, and floss and look at your floss each time you between two contacts of your teeth. Look at it, and if you're really brave, smell it. Because if there's any color on the floss or there's any foul odor, that is a surefire sign of an active infection there in that gum pocket. That's called gingivitis. Okay, that's bleeding gums. So if a person has gingivitis, what that means by definition is that the skin on the gum tissue in that pocket has sloughed off. The body essentially is trying to get rid of this irritant of the bacterial infection by sloughing off the skin, and unfortunately it doesn't work. And now there's no skin there to protect the capillaries, and now the bad bugs have direct access to our bloodstream. So the issue is that these bugs cause, perhaps causally, an inflammatory cascade through the whole body. I mean, I'm sure you're familiar with the whole cytokine model of inflammation. This is very much what's going on, and a lot of people would argue that the mouth is, if not the main issue, at least one of the main vectors of causing systemic inflammation in the body. And once the body goes into that systemic inflammatory response, you know, I mean, now you're fighting an uphill battle.
That is very, very interesting. And I know that I'm glad that you brought up the flossing. You obviously have amazing blog post titles, and I really, really love all of them when I read them. They're really great. And you did mention flossing and its connection to heart disease. So, like, does flossing really lower the risk of a heart attack? And what's the connection between that and these other, like, areas of health when it comes to, like, just something like a simple practice like flossing? How could that really make such a big difference?
Well, let me give you a clinical study that we really hang our hat on here to begin this discussion on flossing. There was a study done in 2006 where they took, scientists took 300 men who were at risk of a heart attack. Okay, so how does science determine that? Well, you know, obviously we hear about blood cholesterol and all that stuff, but actually blood cholesterol, they've realized, is not that tremendous of a biomarker for the risk of heart disease any longer. So what they used was something called a measurement in the blood called C-reactive protein. C-reactive protein, or what goes as CRP, is an inflammatory marker. It's a marker in our blood. You know, if you ever have a blood draw and some blood testing done, they can measure for C-reactive protein in your blood. And essentially what it tells them is how much systemic inflammation is going on in your system. How enraged is your body right now? How much is it dealing with some chronic infection? Okay? Mm-hmm. So they took these 300 men. They all had elevated C-reactive protein levels into the zone that meant that they were at risk of heart disease. And they said, all right, we're going to do a lifestyle modification study here. And all we want you to do, you're not going to change your diet, you're not going to start meditating and nothing else. All we want you to do is we want you to floss at least once every other day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, simple. And they did it for 6 months, and then they retested the C-reactive protein on all the men. And what they found is that every single one of them dropped their C-reactive protein levels to where they were no longer in that at-risk of heart disease zone for the C-reactive protein levels in their blood. Now, that's big enough. But then the researchers took it another step, and they said, let's see what happens if we have them stop flossing. And so they said, all right, let's keep the study going. Let's stop flossing. And they retested them, and all their CRP levels went back up. Their C-reactive protein levels went back up to being at risk. And so to me, you know, the write-up on the study says, well, that doesn't exactly prove a causal relationship. I'm like, you know, I don't need, you know, a scientist to tell me whether something is causal proof or not, to look at that and be like, that was a well-designed study. And it sure does seem like flossing lowers the risk of systemic inflammation, provided that a person has something going on in their mouth, which, you know, I already shared our sad stats. We all do to one degree or another. So flossing and oral hygiene is important because it does address this issue of this colonization along the gum line that these periodontal pathogens, the bad bugs, cause, and that results in the systemic inflammatory response that causes our C-reactive protein levels, in this case of the study, to go up. And if a person is at a higher level of inflammation in their system, they are at greater risk of heart disease, cancer, diabetes, arthritis, the list goes on and on and on. Why? Well, because all of these diseases are manifestations of inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
So if we address the inflammation, I would argue there's at least heavy consideration to be at the source, at the cause, being that the mouth is at least one of the major vectors of contamination. then we are lowering our risk of not just heart disease, but any inflammatory response. I mean, stress, you know, it's mm-hmm. huge.
Now, what's interesting about flossing, and I want to just touch on this idea, too. I always try to picture, like, what we were doing in the past as far as, like, our oral hygiene. Why is it, like, yep. so mandatory nowadays? Because I can't imagine that floss was available back in the day. And correct me if I'm wrong. It's just a complete visualization that I have in my head. It doesn't necessarily be a fact. But what did people – why was it so less of an issue back then as in comparison to now?
Right. That's a good question. That's a really good question. So the way I view it is this. If we were able to live a lifestyle that our ancestors lived, and we're depending on how far back we go, okay, mm-hmm. we do have modern records of people like, you know, the native Indians from India and the African tribes people have been using chewing sticks for a long, long time. And mm-hmm. and their herbalism had recognized, like, oh, well, if we use a chewing stick from a neem, you know, neem, we know, is a very powerful antimicrobial for bad bugs in the mouth. And so these cultures figured out along the way, like, okay, this is what we use as a toothbrush, more or less. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's not a toothbrush, but it's a, you know, an ancestor of a toothbrush. But if we go further back, what we're dealing with here, we're talking pre-agricultural revolution, so we're going into, you know, Paleolithic times. If we're talking about paleo, then we really, if we were able to live that lifestyle, Omar, we wouldn't need mm-hmm. to floss, theoretically. You know, it's suggested mm-hmm. that the average Paleolithic person, okay, you're familiar with the two types of nervous system. We have the parasympathetic nervous system and the sympathetic nervous system. We have the rest and digest and the fight or flight, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. and if we look, if it's accurate, what scientists are suggesting at this point, that our Paleolithic ancestors spent 99.5% of their time out of every day, 99.5% in rest and digest mode, and 0.5% in fight or flight. Now, let's mm-hmm. contrast that to today. You know, most mm-hmm. I live a pretty idyllic lifestyle over here in Hawaii. We got it sweet. And mm-hmm. and I'm not at 100% yet. I'm not at a 99.5 of rest and digest, because what that does is it allows the body to recuperate. And so I believe that a lot of it has to do with our diet, our modern diet. I think perhaps even more so is our modern lifestyle. And so I consider floss and oral hygiene to kind of be a kind of a stopgap. It's like, okay, these help us kind of mitigate the damage caused if we don't. It's not a be-all and end-all. It doesn't stop everything, because we still need to address diet and lifestyle factors, too, if we really want to optimally navigate this path to greater oral health. But I think that it really plays a huge part, the stress and lifestyle factor. So, yeah, cave people weren't using floss. But then again, they weren't eating Dunkin' Donuts. Oops, I probably shouldn't say a commercial name like that. They weren't eating donuts and you know, eating foods, what we call, what do we call them? Non-food-like substances, right? They're not foods, right? And so I really think that a lot of it has to do with just the innate immune system at this point, just being bombarded. And so we use these tools like flossing to help mitigate the damage of the modern lifestyle.
Makes a lot of sense. And don't worry, Dunkin' Donuts is not a sponsor of mine, so, you know,
okay.
you can say whatever you like and call out anybody you like at this point. But, yeah, I'm glad you kind of did a little segue into the diet component. Like, what are some of the foods? And, or, like, obviously, that's our foods have to not be donuts, et cetera, et cetera. What other major issues with our diets today that actually are killing us as far as our oral health, and what are some foods that are actually beneficial for our oral health?
Yeah, so diet does play a huge role. I mean, I don't we just recently started following your stuff. I don't know if your community is familiar with the work of Weston Price or not. Are you?
Yeah, I believe
you,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I definitely think a lot of them should be on to Weston Price for sure,
sweet.
Including myself.
Okay.
I,
okay. Okay, sweet. Okay, so if I could distill Weston Price's work down to just some real takeaway gems, you know, mm-hmm. Well, for anybody listening who's not familiar, he was a dentist back in the 1930s. He said, oh, my God, what's going on here with people's teeth? They're falling apart. He was working in Ohio at the time. And so he traveled the world. He went to pre-industrialized cultures, to primitive, quote-unquote, primitive cultures living in their traditional styles, and studied their diets, their mouths, and he found impeccable oral health as well as whole body health. And, you know, in one village that Dr. Price went and studied, he was granted access to the graveyard, and he was able to study the skulls, and he would find at this one village, he found one cavity in 100 skulls, so one cavity in every 3,200 teeth. So,
wow.
You know, these people had something going right. And here's what he found as far as just a broad brushstroke of diet. The native peoples were eating four times on average the minerals that our modern lifestyle was in the 1930s, mind you. Our lifestyle, our diets have degraded since then. And they were mm-hmm. eating 10 times the fat-soluble vitamins people in the 1930s. And I really have to pause here and say that in the 1930s, the U.S. had not been hit with the media propaganda blitz of the low-fat propaganda. So, mm-hmm. you know, 10 times the fat-soluble vitamins. So these people ate a lot of quality fats. And so if I'm going to talk about foods that help and foods that don't help us navigate to optimal oral health, I really have to start with quality fats. And I'm sure you're all over the idea of quality fats being in their natural form, saturated fats, real fats, animal fats of quality sources, organ meats, you know, whether it's from, you know, the cod liver oil, our parents, our grandparents were correct. That's tremendous for mm-hmm. us. As well as pastured animal organ meats are huge for us as well. There's just way too much science there to dispute that. You know, so at this point, if I had to use myself as a poster child, 60 to 70% of my daily calories come from quality fats. Okay. I eat a lot of bone broth. I eat a lot of coconut products. I mean, we're spoiled here in Hawaii that we can get fresh coconut products. I eat a lot of animal products too. And to balance that, I eat a lot of vegetables. So that's
got it. That's
really where I'm coming from as far as the helpful foods. If I've got to throw one food under the bus when it comes to a food that undermines oral health, it's sugar. But it's not why, you know, I mean, everybody in dentistry would say, oh, well, sugar's bad for you and don't eat it, right? Well, they're giving you a lollipop as you leave the dental office as a kid. So the issue with sugar isn't really so much, the primary issue at least, isn't so much because of sugar is going to feed the bacteria in your mouth and it's going to ferment and cause a breakdown of the teeth. That's partly true. I mean, it's true, but it's not the whole truth. The real mm-hmm. issue with sugar is that it disrupts our blood chemistry. And when it disrupts our blood chemistry, it throws our body's ability to naturally flush these bad bugs out of our teeth, it throws it off whack. So let me explain. Can I go into this, Omar? Is this okay?
Yes, please. I was actually going to ask you how does that work. So go ahead. Absolutely.
Okay. So there's a researcher by the name of Dr. Ralph Steinman, who was a dental researcher back in the 1970s. Dr. Steinman is one of these crazy scientists who just was impassioned with his work. And he dove into it, and he did lab tests on rats, just crazy, for decades. And he was really passionate about finding the cause of tooth decay. So without going into the gory details of what he did to the rats, which is like, I don't know how people do that, but whatever. You know, let's mm-hmm. learn from those studies so at least we don't have to do them again.
Yes.
So what Dr. Steinman did is he found out, A, that our teeth are alive. They have a flow of fluid through them. Okay, so that's kind of a trip in and of itself because our culture doesn't really get that.
Right, yeah.
So our teeth are alive, and they have a flow of fluid through them. And he said, wow, I wonder what controls the flow of fluid through them. And he researched, and he found that this flow of fluid is through a system part of the the salivary system is called the parotid gland, which is controlled by the hypothalamus and the pituitary. And he said, wow, I wonder what causes this whole fluid system in the teeth called dentinal fluid flow. I wonder what causes this fluid flow in the teeth to go the right way to kind of flush the bad bugs out of our mouths, or go into the wrong way, which gives them a free pass into the teeth. You see, what he found is that if he fed rats a certain diet, that this fluid flow would come from the inside of the tooth outward. It basically just washes the tooth out on a regular basis. Mm. What a beautiful design, right?
Yeah.
But if we have the wrong diet, then this dentinal fluid flow, this fluid flow in the teeth reverses and becomes a suction machine and draws these bugs from the surface of the tooth into the teeth, so they get a free ride in and decay soon sets in. Sound familiar?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's
so
okay.
What's the main culprit that Dr. Steinman found causes this reverse? Sugar.
Wow.
But it's not because of the sugar in the mouth per se. It's because of the sugar in the blood that causes an imbalance of blood phosphorus. Trip out here. Hang with me, chemistry people that don't really like this stuff. It causes an imbalance in blood phosphorus, which then throws this whole dentinal fluid flow system in reverse, in self-destruct mode. So the question that I have to anybody listening is this. How many times a week do you eat something sugary between meals? Because that's what Dr. Steinman found was like the total holy grail. If you want to destroy your teeth, eat sugary snacks between meals. And that throws this whole dental fluid system into self-destruct mode best.
Now, here's just a little bit follow-up question to that. Now, he's saying if they ate sugar with a particular meal, it would the results were better in that way?
Is right. They are somewhat mitigated. Yes.
Mm.
Yes.
Okay.
You know, in other words, if you eat sugar with a fat, if you eat sugar with a protein, then it's going to slow down the absorption. It's not going to have that same inflammatory cascade that we get as far as, you know, spiking the blood sugar and the whole thing that the paleo community. I mean, the writers, the head honchos in the paleo and primal movement have really done a tremendous job bringing the public's awareness to the impact of blood sugar imbalance and what, you know, sugar dysbiosis in the system, insulin dysbiosis in the system. This is all tremendous work. And it's hugely important, not just for systemic health, obviously, like they discuss, but for oral health as well.
Yeah, listen, I've been beating the sugar drum for years and years, so I know that there's definitely a very, very bad impact on your body. Now, is this also, are we talking about just refined sugars, or is this something fruits and sugars in its natural form? Did he ever make a distinction?
Yeah, thank you for asking this. We've got a good friend that you actually might want to interview her, Dr. Kate Shanahan. She's written the book. She's written two books, one called Deep Nutrition and another one called Food Rules. Incidentally, you mentioned, you know, we've been longtime friends with Sean Croxon, and I turned Sean on to Kate Shanahan's book, and he said, wow, this is my new favorite book. This was many years ago now, and he's, you know, since gone on to continue his path. But yeah, Kate's book is, her book is awesome. And so I turned to her and I said, what's going on here? And as far as sugar and, you know, is it just simple sugars or what? And she said, well, because she's a biochemist, she's a doctor, but her major was in biochemistry. And she said, look, all carbs are sugars, dude. Biochemically, you put any, I don't care if it's rice or a Snickers bar. Well, a Snickers bar has some fats in it, which aren't necessarily good for you in that case because they're not the quality fats that we're looking for. But I don't care if it's maple syrup or table sugar or honey or agave or rice, those are all biochemically the same in the body.
Mm-hmm.
So it does matter, the quality. I would just say that, you know, in regards to this whole thing with dentinal fluid flow, that it's got to be a sugar. In other words, if you know, if, God forbid, if a person listening drinks diet soda or uses artificial sweeteners, that's not going to necessarily negatively impact their this whole dentinal fluid flow, of course, is going to undermine their health in tons of other ways, but But I'm sure that we don't have people listening to your show that are drinking sodas while they're listening.
Well, I hope not.
Yeah.
That's an easy one to not to follow. I mean, that they should absolutely not be drinking that kind of stuff. That's really, really interesting info. I want to get onto the mindset topic for a second before we get to like my Facebook questions and stuff like that.
Yeah.
On your blog, and again, I love the blog. You talk about healing the mental or psychic disconnect we have with our mouths. Will you speak to that concept with us a little bit?
Yeah, this is kind of a different one. And I want to commend you, Omar, because I think you really do a fabulous job bringing people's attention to the importance of mindset. It's huge, and we're right there with you. And as important as diet is, if there's one thing that's going to trump the importance of diet, it's mindset. Okay, so we really go on this too, and we really beat this drum loudly. This idea of healing a mental or a psychic disconnect we have with our mouths. What do we mean by that? Here's one classic example of what we mean by a mental disconnect with our mouths. You remember the sad statistics we just spoke about, right? 98% of our culture does what we're taught for oral health. We brush, most of us floss, we use fluoride, et cetera, right? So if the sad statistics are accurate, which they are, wouldn't you think that if the path that we walk as a culture for our oral health was heading in the right direction, that these sad statistics would be much lower? I mean, doesn't that make sense?
Yeah, and I think you're right on the money. I think it's even true with just the regular diet component. Like if everyone's, I think that's why people are obese. They kind of do follow the recommendations of, you know, the government. And after a while that it does cause obesity. I mean, with all the garbage that is in the food pyramid, they do come.
Yep.
They listen. So absolutely.
I totally agree with you. So that's really part of this mental disconnect. We think like, oh, I'm doing right because I was taught to brush and floss and la la la, and I'm doing it. And yet we ignore the statistics, which are staring us in the face, that what we're doing is miserably failing.
Mm-hmm.
So we've come to see this mental disconnect as the following. There's a German word called Einstellung. Okay, Einstellung means it's a block that we create that limits our ability to learn new information when we think we already understand something that we don't. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So we create limits in our lives. We block our ability to grow when we think we already know something. So each of us has been taught to brush our teeth and that brushing our teeth will stop us from getting cavities, yet 98% of men, women, and children in the U.S. have some form of chronic oral disease. It just doesn't add up. I'm reminded of the story. Susan and I met in a kung fu school, so long time in the Chinese longevity arts and the martial arts world. So I'm reminded of a story out of our martial arts background where the expert goes to learn higher levels from the master, and the master invites the expert in to have some tea with him. Right, and as they sit down at the table to have tea, the master begins to pour tea into the expert's cup. And the expert watches as the master fills the cup and continues to pour tea until the cup is overflowing onto the table. And kind of incredulously, the expert jumps up and he proclaims, "Why did you overfill my cup? I can't take any more tea." And the master replies, "You are like the cup. You can't learn anything new because your cup is already full." So I ask anyone listening to empty their cup of what we think we know about oral health, tooth decay, gum disease, whatever, and just be open to this information. While much of this information may seem odd, it's based on solid research done by people much brighter than I am, and I get the benefit of simply parroting their wisdom and sharing it with you today. So that's really what
like,
we mean by this whole, this mental or psychic disconnect.
I mean, it makes a lot of sense. So what do you think we're doing absolutely wrong? Like if you could say one thing right now, even with the brushing thing, I think, are we brushing correctly? Are we using the proper tools to, you know, like I learned to brush when I was 3 or whatever age that was.
Right.
Like, am I doing it right? Have I been doing it wrong for all these years? Is that part of the problem?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's part of the problem, absolutely. You know, part of the problem is that we learned it at such a young age that we established that belief that, you know, like we were talking about the Einstellung, we established that belief that I know what I'm doing so early that we don't go back and ever question that. And by and large, we're not brushing right. and we're not flossing right, and we're not eating right, and we're using products in the mouth that have not been designed from a whole body awareness. And all of these things add up and just, you know, they weaken our immune system, and they make us vulnerable to, you name it, tooth decay, gum disease, if we're talking about oral health, but, you know, lots and lots more if you're talking about systemic health too.
That's crazy. And I definitely want to tell the audience, you know, definitely check out your site, because you really do get into this in more detail with your blogs and your actual videos and stuff to really show what we're doing wrong with our oral health. So I definitely want to recommend us to all the audience to just check that out as well. But that's why I want to just jump into some of like the Facebook questions. I know I got a ton of questions that we were asked, and they told me to try to run by you. I just wanted to just jump into a few because it's just time permitting. I know, for instance, you have a very strong stance on root canals. And right. I can't tell you how many people that I come across on a regular basis who talk about that they have to get root canals, et cetera, et cetera. What's your stance on root canals, and why are they something that you don't really go by and you're really, really against?
Right. So let me start, if I can, by defining what a root canal is for the listener. Okay. In simple terms, a root canal is where a dentist, or you know, what's called an endodontist, which is a dental specialist, goes in and they kill the tooth. They essentially drill out the center of the tooth, the pulp of the tooth, which is where the nerve is, and the blood supply into and out of each tooth. So they go and kill the tooth. They presumably seal it. They put a cap on it, a crown on it, and they call it good. Mm-hmm. And in the dental community by and large, the conventional dental community, a failed root canal is one where they didn't get all the nerve and it still causes you pain. Okay, now, I've got to put this kind of disclaimer out there, Omar. Anybody listening to this, if you've got a root canal, please don't let this information freak you out. I want to share this with you so you can perhaps find answers to other issues that may be going on in your body. The last thing I want to do with sharing our information is causing one stress, because stress is not good for us. So with that said, let's kind of tiptoe into this root canal subject, because I just cringe at the idea of somebody listening going, oh, my God, I've got three root canals in my mouth, and they're listening, and then they start freaking out. But I want to share the information with you, too. So here's the main issue, as I see it, with root canals. Nowhere else in medicine is it considered okay to leave dead tissue in the body. You see, our teeth are alive, like we stated. They have a flow of blood into and out of each one. They actually, like we've just discussed, have lots of various fluids flowing through them. Truly, teeth are like living crystals. It's a crystalline structure. It's a living crystalline structure. But if you take too mechanical of an approach to treating these living crystals, what you get is a complete break from acceptable medical practice. Really, I mean, think about it. Where else in medicine would it be okay to leave some dead tissue? And what happens if we leave dead tissue in the body? It's like it rots. Right. And it creates a wonderful environment to produce some really, really nasty toxins. There are other issues with root canals, namely that dentistry has admitted that they can't fully seal the tooth after they kill it. So the toxins that invariably grow in that tooth can proliferate and then spread into the rest of the system. And as we've already discussed, it doesn't just stay in the mouth. And because it's a dead tooth, the immune system can't get to it to deal with it. So again, you're dealing with an enemy inside the gate. You're dealing with a situation here where some of the gnarliest, most toxic substances humans have found on the planet, are found in root canal teeth, some root canal teeth. Forgive me, I don't want to freak everybody out, but are found in a percentage of root canal teeth, and they dump their toxins into the system. We did a summit many years ago called the Healthy Mouth World Summit, and one of the experts we interviewed was a dentist who has really sunk his teeth into this root canal issue and, you know, made movies about it and written books about it and the whole nine yards. And he said that he has lost count on the number of women who have come to him who say, I have early breast cancer, and I've got a root canal. And he deals with their root canal, and the breast cancer goes away. Now, I'm not suggesting that having a root canal out is going to heal breast cancer, but we already gave the quote from Dr. Issels, and the way that we make sense of this, Omar, is this. The mouth, you know, we've got a very holistic background. Like I shared, we've been studying the Chinese longevity arts for 30 years now. So that's really where we're coming from. The mouth, we kind of view it as the headwaters to the whole body. If you think about a river, and the body is like a river, and every river has a point where it begins up in the mountains, right? Mm-hmm. Well, the mouth is the headwaters to the rest of the body. So if we've got something nasty going on in the mouth, it's going to flow downstream. It has to. The body is designed that way. And it's going to flow downstream and cause a challenge, and the immune system's going to go, whoa, wait a second here. We got an inflammatory response, and then we've already covered this. Then you get that whole systemic inflammatory response that leads to, you name it, pick the poison of your choice as far as the disease. So that's really my biggest beef with root canals, is that the dental community, by and large, the conventional dental community says it's okay, but there's research out there that says otherwise. So I feel kind of, I feel that our culture has been misled, frankly, Omar. And it's unfortunate that we've been, I don't know if it's been an intentional misleading or not, or just kind of like, you know, the culture can be kind of slow in learning new stuff sometimes. But I feel like we've been misled when it comes to information like root canals and many other things like, that I'm sure you cover in your work.
Now, the alternative would be to pull the tooth completely in that state? Like, if there is an issue like that, or
alternative? You're talking about post-root canal, right? Like, a person already has a root canal?
Or even if someone, you know, you go to the dentist, and the dentist is like, well, you need a root canal. Like, how do you deal with that, like, problem?
Okay, so we've actually written a whole series on root canals on our blog, and have addressed all these kind of steps along this pathway. And one of the questions that we address is, one of the articles is literally titled, "My Dentist Says I Need a Root Canal, What Are My Options?"
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we've taken a lot of different angles on this root canal subject and really dove into the research and the literature and share our perspective. If a dentist is telling you need a root canal, then run out of that office and at the very least go get a second opinion by another dentist in the area. Even better, go to a holistic dentist or somebody who says, no, I am fervently against root canals, or, you know, even better, you know, we know one dentist who's a friend of ours who actually still does some root canals, which is interesting, but it's not even fair to compare what he does with what we as a culture understand as a root canal, because the procedure that he goes through is phenomenally different. Mm-hmm. And so my advocacy to a person would be, get another opinion. Don't take that person's word for it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we've got an issue here that, here's another rub that I've got, Omar, with our industry.
Mm-hmm.
If let me take this whole dental model and take it over to medicine for a moment. Let's say that you go to a doctor and you're just going for a regular checkup.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that the doctor is going to make his or her money from your visit is by determining the number of pieces of body part that they need to remove from you permanently, and you're going to pay them more for every piece of body part that they remove from you. Okay?
Yeah.
Sound like a crazy system? Pretty spooky?
Quite crazy.
Yeah. That's exactly what we have with dentistry. I consider it a monumental conflict of interest when you consider that a dentist, A, says you need to have a root canal, or, you know, we recently had a customer contact us who said, or actually not a customer yet, a lady, you know, we get outreaches all the time like you do, and this lady contacted us, said, hey, I'm up against a wall, and just took my, I think he's a five, maybe he's an eight-year-old. Anyway, he's a five-year-old. Just took my five-year-old son to a dentist, and the dentist says that he needs eight fillings. And I got a lot of problems with that. I have a lot of problems with that because that dentist gets paid per filling.
Yes.
And that is really asking a tremendous amount from a human being to be ethical.
Mm-hmm.
And just to kind of let myself off the hook here, at the very least, it's putting a lot of power in the hands of the dentist and the dental community, because this dentist is now in a position to say, okay, they've got to judge a probability. What's the likelihood of this small cavity going further, or what's the likelihood of this person being able to apply strategies to remineralize this and not have to fill this cavity? So, you know, at the very least, it's a value judgment. At worst, a person is at the mercy of somebody who might not be ethical with their business practice. I don't know. You know, I mean, there's ethical and unethical people in every industry. So,
absolutely.
In a situation of a person being told that they need a root canal, I would say go get a second opinion. And sometimes it's worth traveling to do so. We've got a blog on our site. I think it's called Helpful Resources to Assist You in Finding I can get you the link if you want, Omar. I'm here on my computer. Let me see if I can look it up. It's got a database, several databases on it to help you find different dentists that can help you. And I'm almost there. It is called, oh my goodness, 4 pages. I guess I've been writing for a while. Helpful Resources to Find a Qualified Dentist to Assist You. That's the title of the blog post, and it's got a number of databases on it that you can go onto and like, oh, okay, here's a database that Oral Wellness says might be a helpful resource to find a dentist that is going to give me a little bit of a different opinion on this, whether I need a root canal or not.
Yeah, that's real important. I know this is a lot of people, just whatever the dentists say, they just go ahead and do it right then and there. And that holds true for wisdom teeth too, correct? I mean, do you
it
have
does,
any opinion?
Unfortunately.
Are wisdom teeth good, bad? I mean, like, I'm telling you, I don't know how many dentists have told me, you should pull your wisdom teeth. They're going to mess your teeth up in the future. Is that any accuracy to that?
I love the back teeth.
The ones that you should keep because they're the strongest. And, you know, as you get older, I mean, that's the really what you're chewing with, right? I mean, like, it's crazy.
I totally agree with you. Okay, so, you know, because we both deal on this level of mindset, one of our favorite things to do is to take the myths that our culture, that we as a culture presume to be true, and let's just shine the light of truth on it and let people make up their own minds. Okay, so we've got a blog post on our site, which is called, Is It Really Wise to Have Your Wisdom Teeth Removed? And it walks through the five main myths around wisdom teeth. And yours is my favorite. That you got to have them removed or it's going to move your teeth. I'm not going to say that not having wisdom teeth is always wise, because the bottom line is, if a person's oral hygiene is not up to par, the wisdom teeth are really tough to get to. If they're impacted, they can be partly erupted and you can't really get to it. And it can be a beautiful breeding ground for the bad bugs implicated with gum disease.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So they can be problematic. So it's not a one-size-fits-all. However, they don't have a greater tendency to become diseased. It's, you know, myth number two about, you know, having wisdom teeth out earlier in life because it's easier. The research is not there. Okay, mm-hmm. The highest risk of secondary problems from having wisdom teeth removed lies in the age range between 25 and 34. Okay, the ages 12 to 24 is higher than the risk 35 to 83. So it's not true. My favorite, leaving wisdom teeth intact will cause your teeth to shift and get misaligned. Let me just debunk this. There's a quote from a dentist here, Dr. Jay Friedman. that says third molars, that's wisdom teeth, third molars do not possess sufficient force to move other teeth. They cannot cause crowding and overlapping of the incisors. So it's just bunk. It's just not true, Omar. But is the dentist lying to us? No, they're just pitching the party line. They probably don't know any better. They're just doing what they're told, what they were taught. Again, they're just as much victims as to Einstellung as we are, thinking that we know something that we don't have all the information on.
Right, right.
Unfortunately, yeah. They're in a position of power, and they're in a position of an expert that we listen to, and so we follow them off the cliff.
Yeah, no, it's a shame. It really, really is. I want to touch. It really, really is unbelievable. And I guess it comes to the fact that like a lot of people just don't want to be considered revolutionary in this. You know, thank God that you're doing this and promoting this kind of information so that people are realizing exactly, you know, at least some facts on some of these ridiculous things that they keep pushing on us. And I greatly appreciate that from you, for sure.
Yeah.
Also, I wanted to go ahead.
Okay. I want to throw something out here, Omar, because I want to clarify. I don't think that the industry is intentionally misleading us. I want to just make that really clear here, because I'm not, that's just depressing if I choose to go down that road mentally. So let me share with you where I think it's coming from and why it happens. I believe that by and large, dentistry is a branch of medicine. Dentistry and medicine have this habit of what we call over-compartmentalizing the body. We like to, you know, this analytical mind, this Western mind of ours really likes to break the body apart and study its parts and kind of treat it like a car. But unfortunately, we're not a car. We're a biological organism. We're a community. Each of us is a community. Mm-hmm. And if we're treated as if we're parts, that the parts are going to add up to the whole, then it can lead us down to this really reductionist thinking to where we can where we miss the forest from the trees, and we don't see the connection between gum disease and heart disease or root canals and cancer and stuff like that. So I really just consider that the medical and dental community, by and large, I mean, there's a lot of good dentists out there too, but by and large, we're not on par with realizing this whole system. We've got to address the whole system together. And so if we're dealing with a procedure or a product or a solution that has been formulated from this over-compartmentalized mindset, then we can be at risk of causing trouble. I mean, that's like the whole root canal thing. It's not thinking clearly from a whole body system standpoint. And so the very basis of the concept is flawed as a result. So it's this over-compartmentalization that provokes us to, that provokes our medical and dental community to, in my opinion, kind of lead us not in our ideal path for optimal oral or whole body health.
You know, absolutely. I wish everybody would take a more holistic approach to the body and just see, you know, their wellness overall. I think that's definitely the key to helping us eradicate some of these issues that we're having, for sure. I wanted to touch on with one subject too before we get into the Facebook questions, and I know that there was a huge concern about mercury fillings, and I just wanted you to touch a little bit about why they're so dangerous, and also warning people not to just go run out and have anybody remove them automatically without doing their due diligence as far as researching somebody who actually could properly do that. So if you could just touch on that, that would be great.
You bet. Yeah, so I think the cat's out of the bag as far as mercury goes, thankfully. Dr. Hal Huggins, he's really the modern grandfather of biological dentistry. He just recently passed away. He's been sounding the alarm about mercury for over 40 years at this point. We had the honor to interview Dr. Huggins before he passed away. Actually, when he passed away, we interviewed him for our Healthy Mouth World Summit. And when he passed away, we put his interview for free. People can watch it for free on our site, on our blog, as just a memory to him. So he's been sounding the alarm for a long time. Another mentor of ours, Dr. David Kennedy, is a retired dentist. He was the first to catch mercury vapor off-gassing from a dental fill on, from a dental filling on video. So, you know, the bottom line is this. Mercury, you know, forever and still, unfortunately, the stance of the ADA is that mercury is bound in what's called silver amalgam fillings, right? Amalgam simply means a mix. It's a mix of different metals. Well, you know, and they want to call them silver fillings because that makes you feel like, ooh, I got, you know, silver in my mouth. That's almost as good as gold. But in fact, it's like 50% mercury. And these products, this mercury amalgam, has been used to one level or another, not exactly the same formula that's used today, but in one level or another since the American Civil War. That's 1865 for those of us who are not real American Civil War, you know, don't have our history boots on right now. So we're going back like, what, 150 years at this point, and we're still using this in the mouths of people today, and it's been proven that it off-gasses. Now, what's the harm with mercury? I mean, stupidly, I remember as a kid, you know, ooh, we got a broken thermometer, let's play with the mercury, right? So yeah. Mercury happens to be like the second most toxic substance on the planet, and it's a super powerful neurotoxin. In other words, it kills nerve tissue like nothing else. It is tremendous for this. It's just like the kingpin when it comes to nerve damage. So we've got these little fillings in our mouths. They off-gas more when we drink hot coffee because of the heat. They off-gas more when we chew gum because of the activity, or when we brush our teeth, or God forbid, when a dental hygienist picks at them. They off-gas more, and we breathe this mercury vapor in, and it settles in the system in the form of methyl mercury, and it causes all sorts of problems. You know, I mean, that we will see in our lifetime the end of mercury in dentistry. I'm very confident of that. It's heading that direction. But, you know, the harm's done. You know, And I agree with you, Omar, that we have to be really careful when we consider, you know, somebody listening to this like, oh, God, go freak out and have a conventional dentist go remove their fillings. So we actually have an ebook that will be available soon online on our page. It's not there yet. We're in the middle of a site redesign right now. So once we're done, it's called Questions to Ask Your Dentist. And we mean it as a free resource to help people to be able to discern if their dental practitioner really has themselves screwed on straight when it comes to being able to assist each of us in navigating to optimal oral health. So here's a couple things out of Questions to Ask Your Dentist in regards to mercury fillings. Does the dentist still place mercury fillings? If so, I won't go into that office because the whole office has toxic levels of mercury vapor in it. The whole office. Okay, it was Dr. David Kennedy that made us aware that dental assistants, that's the normally the lady who's sitting next to the dentist, right? Dental assistants have, I don't remember the statistic, I think it's like 40% are 40% less likely to be able to conceive children.
Oh, man.
You know, I mean, and this is exactly because of the toxins that they're exposed to in the office. So I won't go into that office if they still place fillings. And then there are specific questions that you can ask a dentist. A, that you find out, okay, they don't place mercury fillings anymore, but they do remove them. What do they do to safely remove the fillings? And this is what the Questions to Ask Your Dentist is all about. It helps to really have some very specific questions regards to that to really make sure, because there is some greenwashing going on in the dental community. You know, dentistry is not a trusted industry. Dentists are not, it's not a super business, in my opinion, and we as a culture don't trust dentists. And so, you know, a dentist can jump on this bandwagon of saying, oh, I'm going to call myself holistic, and so then I can just, you know, I can draw on this whole movement towards organic that and health food that's occurring. So there's questions that you can ask down whether or not they're greenwashing their business or whether they really are doing what they're doing and doing it right.
Yeah, and I'm glad you did touch on that, the trusting of the dentist industry. I have reasons, I think, that why I feel that it's a particular practice that people are a little untrusting of. Do you have another reason why that you feel that's the case?
Well, I think we've kind of addressed it through our talk here today, Omar. That really it comes down to dentists, in my opinion, are as much of victims of Einstellung as the rest of us. They believe in what they've been taught, and that limits their ability to look at what other science might be out there, what other research might be out there. And so they speak that to us, but we feel in our gut that something's not right. Mm-hmm. And if we feel that, then we're like, what's going on? You know, that's like our rubbish meter. I don't know if I can use BS meter here online on there or not. Our BS meter. Okay. Our BS meter goes off and says, I'm having the wool pulled over my eyes here a little bit to one degree or another. And, mm-hmm. and that I think is really the major underlying cause of just that gut feeling distrust we have of the whole industry. Because dentists, again, you know, they've over-compartmentalized the body, and they've been pitched a line in schooling that doesn't really take the whole body into consideration. So I really consider that to be the foundation of the mistrust that our culture has around dentistry.
Makes a lot of sense. I also think the drill and the unpleasant experiences people have with dentists overall gets people a little leery of dentists in general. I'm just going to ask maybe like two more questions because I know we're running out of time. I'll just get back to like one of the more popular ones. Like, well, what is your idea of like how to get people's teeth obviously whiter? There's a lot of teeth whitening products, and I know my audience, if they're like anything like me, you know, we drink our coffee and we, you know, indulge in some wine on occasion. So, like, what are some of the things that you suggest that can actually get our teeth whiter?
Sure. So we're actually just wrapping up a blog series right now on. So the whole title of the blog series is How to Naturally Whiten Your Teeth Without Destroying Your Enamel. So this whole whitening industry has just boomed this past decade. And unfortunately, there's a dark side to it, too. We're not fans of conventional tooth whitening procedures. It's not the end of the world if a person's done it by any means. Mm-hmm. But there is quite a bit of data out there that suggests that depending on the strategy that a person uses and the level of concentration that they've used and the how frequently they do so, there can be some damage to the gum tissue for sure. The tooth enamel can be damaged sometimes permanently. Mm-hmm. And the bottom line is, you know, we only have so much tooth enamel on our teeth. The enamel is like mm-hmm. the surface of the tooth, and that's the hardest part of the tooth. And once we wear through that enamel, then we're dealing with softer teeth, we're dealing with different issues. Now, thankfully, the body does have the capacity to remineralize our enamel, but we need to have our diet in place to be able to have the nutrition in place, to be able to have the proper immune response so that our system does remineralize the teeth. Otherwise, it's just constantly insulted. So mm-hmm. some strategies to naturally whiten teeth without destroying your tooth enamel, A, address the cause. You know, some people got stained teeth because of, you know, they were exposed to different medications early in childhood. I know that if kids have a line of antibiotics called tetracycline, that'll kind of permanently stain their teeth. But most of us are dealing with the coffee, tea, red wine, green smoothie type of situation. So one is to mitigate that damage. If you're going to drink a cup of coffee, then drink it and then swish your mouth out afterward. You know, like get mm-hmm. the staining material off your teeth. So mm-hmm. just a little bit of consciousness coming into habit will help. You know, I'm here, it's morning time right now while we're doing this. I've got an empty glass of green smoothie in front of me and my glass of water to swish my teeth out. after I finish my smoothie, right? Mm-hmm. So steps like that can really help to lower it. One of my favorites, frankly, is oil pulling. Oil pulling is an old Ayurvedic or traditional Indian detox technique protocol that has been taught for forever in India. It's part of their traditional medical system, and it's kind of gotten the rave of the past few years online. Oil pulling is just swishing around certain oils in the mouth to help draw toxins out of the mouth. There's boatloads of science behind it that it works. There's people online saying, oh, you know, rubbish, it doesn't do anything. But I'm sorry, you know, I'm somebody that looks at the evidence and the literature. I spend a lot mm-hmm. of time on PubMed, and there's tons mm-hmm. of science behind oil pulling that's been proven that it really does help. So it can gently, slowly detoxify the mouth and help whiten the teeth without stressing out your tooth enamel, because it's not actually bleaching the teeth. It's just mm-hmm. drawing the stains out. Kind of like you think about oil in a car's engine, right? You put fresh oil in, you go to do the oil change, you know, after, you know, when it's time to change the oil, and it's all gunky. Well, what is that? That's the oil circulating through the car's engine, grabbing grime and pulling it out of the car, pulling it out of the engine. So oil pulling is very similar to that. And that would really be, you know, we got a blog post on our site about what the heck is oil pulling. It explains that there's lots of good resources for oil pulling information these days too. But it's an excellent tool for natural teeth whitening. There's other strategies. I encourage your listeners to go to our blog. We've got a whole series on this. There's different things you can brush with. We talk about conventional, the differences between what's a whitening strategy versus a bleaching strategy. Mm-hmm. most tooth quote-unquote whiteners these days are actually tooth bleachers. And those are the ones that we're most concerned about.
Got it. I'm glad you brought up like some of the commercial products on the market. What are your thoughts on some of the commercial products, you know, as far as even like Tom's and even Listerine, you know, the more popular products, you know, what's kind of wrong with them? And just, you know, like, again, you have awesome products. I want to give you an opportunity to also discuss about why your products are definitely different from these products and how we can actually get them out for us to start utilizing our oral health.
Sure. Thank you for giving me the chance to mention. When it comes to products, and you know, I'm really shy about pitching our products. What we're really – here's our business model. You ready, Omar? It's really sophisticated. It goes something like this. Here's some really helpful information that you might find useful in navigating your own path to oral health. Here it is for free. And by the way, here's some really quality products that we found benefit from that you might want to know about. There's our business model.
Mm-hmm.
So with that in mind, let me just share with a person here, with your listeners, how to determine if a product is helpful or not. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, what we want to do is we want to be able to have a way to determine if the product that I'm using has been made with the whole body in mind. In other words, there's a myth. Here's another myth that we like to debunk. There's a myth in our culture that goes something like this. What goes in the mouth stays in the mouth. In other words, I can use something in my mouth, and provided that I spit it out, it doesn't go in my whole system.
Right.
But it's not true. It's a myth. Okay, it's been proven time and time again that whatever we put in the mouth is absorbed sometimes even faster than if we swallowed it through the cheek and gum tissue into our bloodstream. So it's a myth.
Wow.
So then the question that we pose to anybody listening is this: how do you determine if the formula or the product that you're using has been created within this myth or not? In other words, the people who created whatever, I don't want to name names here, okay, but some mm-hmm. conventional toothpaste, the formulators who created a toothpaste out there, a big brand name, were they aware of this myth that what goes in the mouth stays in the mouth, or were they believing it still? And if they were believing it, then they're going to have a greater tendency to be willing to use ingredients in that product that, in my opinion, and my wife's in my opinion, have nowhere, do not belong in human systems. Mm-hmm. Okay, fluoride is a classic example of this. Fluoride is gnarly on the system. Okay?
Right.
But if you believe the myth that what goes in the mouth stays in the mouth, then you could be led to the assumption that so long as I just put it on my teeth and I spit it out, it's going to be okay. But, you know, there's a reason that every family-sized tube of toothpaste has a warning on it that says, if your child consumes more than a pea-sized amount, by the way, that's a lot more than the advertisements and the commercials show us to use, but if your child consumes more than a pea-sized amount, call the poison control center. That's on every single tube of fluoride toothpaste. Why?
Absolutely.
Well, because it does not belong in the body. And the formulators of that product, or those products, which are very common, were under the myth that what goes in the mouth stays in the mouth. So what you got to do, anybody who's got a product there that they want to look at, is turn it over and look at it and see if there's anything there that really doesn't make sense. You know, I'm not a proponent of fluoride. We are actually pretty purist. You know, I mean, we created our products because we have mouths and we needed to be able to have something to help us maintain healthy mouths. And so we created our products. So, you know, and so I guess that's about as heavy of a pitch that I can give to our products for your listeners, is that we're very aware that this myth that what goes in the mouth stays in the mouth is a myth. And so we created the formulas that we use in our Healthy Mouth Blend to reflect that, to be aware that it's going to impact the whole system. So we have to use products that are only there to help, not just fill a tube. And that's really the difference. I mean, our Healthy Mouth Blend is a blend of organic and wildcrafted essential oils and a base of organic curry oil. It's all oils. It's not a paste.
Mm-hmm.
And it, our public, our customers can scream our praises much more loudly than we can. We're pretty humble when it comes to stuff like that, but we've got thrilled, happy customers in over 50 countries around the world, Omar. These people, and we get claims, you know, some of my favorite testimonials that we get, emails from people saying, they always start with, I just came back from my dentist. And my dentist says, and then it fill in the blank, you know, my teeth are looking great, whatever I'm doing is my gums. We have several that say, my hygienist, which are the real in the trenches workers there, my hygienist tells me that I have the healthiest looking gums that she has ever seen. Like,
wow.
Whoa, you know, when's the last time any of us heard that? That's huge. So,
yeah,
you know, I encourage people, if you've got something going on in your mouth, you know, our site has lots of helpful resources. There's plenty of resources out there on the internet these days. Look for information before you just take anybody's input on what you need to do, especially if it's something permanent. I mean, you know, once you drill teeth, there's no getting that back. It's a permanent reduction in the tooth. And so we really owe it to ourselves to say no. You know, we talk a lot about self-empowerment. That's not suggesting by contrast. It's not dental self-reliance. We're not saying how to drill your own teeth or how to do anything yourself in regards to dentistry. But what we are talking about is recognizing that within dental self-empowerment is each of us is the most important, by a long shot, the most important person involved with each of our oral health.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as we go to a dentist and we say, help me, I don't know what to do, we've put them in the driver's seat. Well, we need to reclaim that power and put ourselves back in the driver's seat. We've got a lot of free resources on our site. We've got tons of educational videos, how to brush your teeth to reduce gum disease, how, you know, the cure to bad breath, all sorts of, you know, we try to make this something as fun as we can. And it's very helpful information out there for free. And, you know, yeah, we happen to have great products, too, that really help people.
No, you really do. And listen, this has been an awesome show. I know it opened my eyes to more things that I had no idea of. So I want to thank you. I appreciate that, all this information. I hope the audience receives this the same way that I did the first time I heard it, and today as well. But I just want to give you 2 seconds to just give us, you know, your website, how we can contact you and get these awesome products, any parting words that you want to have for the audience. So we'll give you the floor for a sec.
You bet. Thanks. So our website is aurawellness.com, O-R-A wellness.com. It's a common misunderstanding here is it's oral wellness, but it's not. It's O-R-A wellness.com is our site. You can email us there at info@aurawellness. We're, we're really here to help people. So we allow, we're very approachable, in other words. And because we recognize within ourselves our helper's heart and that we're here to serve, we get contact from people all the time asking questions. And sometimes it takes me a little bit to get back to them, but, we get back to people and just help steer people in that direction of what we consider to be helpful resources. You can find our products online at aurawellness.com as well. You can go to Amazon. We got our products there on Amazon as well. And as far as parting words, I think I kind of threw it out there. Really take back your own power when it comes to navigating this path. We've got a free resource on our site called the Aura Wellness Mouth Map. And actually, the very first blog post I wrote was called The First Step to Dental Self-Empowerment. Mm-hmm. And it's got this free resource on it called the Aura Wellness Mouth Map. And it is a tremendous discovery tool that anybody can do. You can download it for free off our site, and it's there for you. And there's more information that we can determine helping ourselves along that path to optimal oral health by just taking 15 minutes and sitting down with this mouth map and filling it out. We can just mm-hmm. learn more about our mouths than any dentist can really tell us, because it's us looking in our own mouth. And that's what this mouth map is really all about, is it provides us a feedback tool. And so, I welcome anyone listening who's got stuff going on to go to auralwellness.com and go under the educational tools and find the Aura Wellness mouth map there and download that, print it out, and sit down and fill it out for 15 minutes. It'll get you further along this path than throwing a bunch of money to a dentist until you know what's going on in your own mouth. Then you'll be in a much better position to be able to be in the driver's seat when it comes to navigating this path when you're presented with, I need to have a root canal, or, you need to have whatever dental procedure.
Got it. Listen, well, this has been a really, really great show. I appreciate you giving all this information to the audience, and I just want to, again, thank you and continue doing what you're doing. I know you open up a lot of eyes, and I hope we'll all be a little bit more healthy and more cognizant of our oral health after this show. Actually, I know I'm going to be even more so. So thanks again.
Right on, Omar. Thank you so much for having us on. Aloha.
Pleasure. Bye-bye. That was Will Rivack. Oh, I told you, this guy is really amazing. I mean, when I heard him first, like I said, it was just mind-blowing as far as the type of information that he provided. And it's scary. I know a lot of us neglect our oral health. It's something that we've taken for granted. And what's interesting is just the idea that we've been doing something for so long, thinking we're doing the right thing and flossing and brushing our teeth and doing what we were told for so long, and it might have some consequences. I want to just thank him again for being on the show, and I really, really appreciate it, Will. This is Omar Cumberbatch from the Wellness Ultimatum Radio Show. Have a good night. Bye-bye.